Hello and welcome to another reading of the Fairfield and Westchester County Business Journals. I'm Mike Eastland and we'll begin with a front page article from the Monday, August 29th edition of the Fairfield County Business Journal. This article entitled, Shelton's Center Stage Theater Generates Entertainment While Fostering a Sense of Community. Since its founding in 2005 by Gary and Francesca Scarpa, Center Stage Theater has provided Shelton with entertaining stage productions and a gathering space for the community. The theater provides opportunities for local creative talent to express themselves on the stage and volunteers to assist in a variety of production responsibilities. The theater has been part of Shelton's Richard O. Belden Cultural Center since 2011. The venue was previously the home of the Lafayette Elementary School, and the center stage shares its tenancy with Living Hope Church and Valley United Way. We take up the bulk of the space, said Managing Director Carla Supersano Sullivan. The former gymnasium is our theater space. We had several classrooms that we occupy. The former kitchen is our costume shop, and the former cafeteria is our set building shop. Prior to being at the Belden Cultural Center, the theater operated along with a combination bookstore and coffee shop in downtown Shelton, and the impetus for this combination business came from Oprah Winfrey. Frank Scarpa attended a presentation by Oprah Winfrey when Oprah turned 50, and Fran also turned 50 in the same year, Sullivan began. Oprah said, "You can do anything you want. Your life starts now. Follow your dreams." Unfortunately, the bookstore and coffee shop portion languished and ended in closure, but the advice was not fruitless because the theater proved to be very popular, and its longevity may be chalked up to a focus on top-notch production values and acting and directorial talent. For this year, 5 full-scale productions will be shown as part of its subscription series, which are the theater's main attractions, and with each having 10 performances. Footloose, the musical, its most recent full-scale production, was an adaptation of the 1984 film of the same name about disaffected youth going up against a small-town authority. To better synchronize with the story's central themes and better immerse audiences, the production recruited cast members between the age of 14 and 23, and while its namesake film has been familiar for decades, the center stage musical sold out during its July 22nd to 31st run. Marvelous Wonderettes, Dream On, is the next full-scale production set for October 14th through the 23rd. It is the 4th show in the Wonderettes series and follows the various exploits of 4 female friends in high school. The production features both an all-woman cast and women at the helm and behind-the-scenes capacities. Finally, their last full-scale production for the year will be Meet Me in St. Louis, a Golden Age musical inspired by the 1944 Judy Garland movie. The show will run from December 2nd through the 11th. Sullivan said that Center Stage will announce our new season on November 14th and then start all over again next February with our show of the season. In between full-scale productions, Center Stage Theater is host to numerous small shows, cabarets, and stand-up comedy rosters, many spanning 1 or 2 nights. Each year, Center Stage has typically had 90 to 100 lit nights in which a production of some sort was playing. I would say next year that will grow to closer to 115 up to 125, Sullivan said. Besides providing entertainment for its community, the theater also provides learning opportunities. The Education Center offers programming during spring and fall semesters, as well as 5 weeks of summer camp, with each semester having between 150 to 200 students enrolled. The center teaches acting, singing, and dancing beginning at the pre-K and going into high school, with some classes for adults as well. Though Center Stage attracts many youthful acting talent and students, the theater is multi-generational in its spirit, with some actors, volunteers, and patrons being in their 80s and 90s. Additionally, since its inception, Center Stage has been elevated in part by family members working together. It definitely started as a family affair with the founders, Gary and Fran Scarpa, and their children, and their extended family who were initially involved in the productions, Sullivan said. These efforts have been appreciated by the Shelton community, which was evident during the pandemic shutdowns. They missed us when we were dark, Sullivan recalled. They really missed not just the performances and the production, but that social gathering place when we were dark. They were very, very anxious to come back and be back in community at our theater. The theater industry as a whole was hit hard by the pandemic, and to this day, even Broadway has not fully recovered. Center Stage has adapted and is financially secure at the moment, though volunteer numbers have yet to reach pre-pandemic numbers. The theater has adopted measures to combat the pandemic, including the requested usage of masks and refunding tickets and rescheduling a performance because a lead contracted COVID-19. We've had to become very, very flexible, very nimble, even more creative than we used to be able to do what we do, Sullivan added. In health news, Yale New Haven Health System expands presence in Fairfield County. Yale New Haven Health Systems, otherwise known as YNHHS, continued its expansion into Fairfield County with the opening of a new facility at 325 Riverside Avenue in Westport. The new location, launched in association with the New England Medical Group, is the first digestive health facility in the county and will offer a wide range of services, including bariatric, colorectal and hernia surgery, as well as gastroenterology services. We are really excited to be here in Westport tonight to dedicate our new facilities for patients who may have digestive health concerns or issues, said Cynthia Sparer, YNHHS's President of Ambulatory Health, at the August 3rd ribbon cutting for the facility. We know that patients throughout the region may need very intensive care, she said, of the strategy behind situating the facility in Westport. We have incredible facilities in our hospitals and throughout our health system to take care of them. But what the care is also about is making it convenient for people to get what they need. So this facility, like many we have opened over the years, really brings the care closer to home for Westport and surrounding communities. Westport has been wonderful and very accommodating. Our teams from facilities and real estate who did all the work to secure the space and develop it just say nothing but positive things. Benjamin Lerner, a gastroenterologist at Yale Medicine who will be taking care of patients at both Bridgeport Hospital and the newly opened Digestive Health Center, said he was excited to bring YNHH services to a new market. This is a great location, Lerner said. This is a way for me to be part of Yale and not have to be in just New Haven, and I think it really works for patients as well. They get to experience Yale and the specialties available through it, but closer to home. Marie Grattan, the interim vice president for digestive health and administration, who will be overseeing the facility, said she believed that the center is needed to meet an absolutely huge demand and actually a lot of unmet demand. Recently, they changed the screening guidelines for colonoscopies, Grattan noted. It was brought down to 45 years of age to get a screening colonoscopy, so there's increased demand that our gastroenterologists need to be able to meet. Early screening helps us to provide early detection and make sure that we can save people's lives and reduce the mortality of colon cancer if something is found. In addition to colonoscopy patients, Grattan said that those seeking weight loss surgery, hernia treatment, or care related to irritable bowel disease will likely want to seek out the specialists at the center. The facility will have several full-time support staffers working alongside physicians who will offer care at the site on a rotating basis. And while the direct impact on Westport's employment figures and economy may be small, Grattan highlighted the value to the town and surrounding communities in terms of time savings and simplicity. We actually had our first patients, and it was a tremendous success, she added. People love it. It's convenient with great parking. It's easier than having to drive to New Haven to get your care. The whole intent was to bring the Yale Medicine, the Yale New Haven Health System standard of care, which is a very high level of quality, directly to the community. To make it easy for folks to come access us, that was the goal of coming to the community. A couple of quick news bits. UConn cites record diversity levels with incoming class of 2026. The University of Connecticut is reporting that the incoming class of 2026 consists of a record number of students of color. Out of the 4,075 first-year college students, 47% identified as non-white, and roughly 26.5% come from races or ethnicities that are traditionally underrepresented in higher education, including Black, Hispanic, and Indigenous populations. UConn added that about 30% of the new students have personal or family incomes that qualify them for federal Pell Grant aid, which the school defined as succeeding in its commitment to providing access to talented students regardless of their financial circumstances. More than one quarter of the students are first generation in their families to attend college, while about 175 of the incoming students led their classes as valedictorians or salutatorians. UConn is experiencing great success in attracting outstanding students from increasingly diverse backgrounds, said Nathan First, UConn's Vice President for Enrollment Planning and Management. Students are drawn to the high-quality education through innovative academic programs and the vibrant undergraduate experience, which drives them towards success during their time at UConn and in their careers. In retail news, Caralusi's Markets readies its new Danbury location. Caralusi's Markets, a family-owned grocery chain, is readying its fourth Fairfield County location on Mill Plain Road in Danbury. According to a press statement from the company, construction on the site began more than a year ago but was delayed due to circumstances beyond their control. Supply issues with certain construction materials, along with delays with key equipment and fixtures to fit out the space, was a hurdle, but timing-wise, it's still a relatively short period for a project of this scope, said Mark Caralusi, president and CEO of Caralusi's Markets. While no official opening date has been announced, the company has been conducting hiring events to fill the roughly 170 new positions, with several management positions to be filled by promotions from within the company. The company has already opened a wine retailer next door to the upcoming grocery. Caralusi's also operates stores in Bethel, Newtown, and Wilton. On a less upbeat note, majority of Connecticut's restaurants struggling with higher costs and shrinking workforce. Connecticut's restaurant industry is facing an existential crisis within the current inflationary economy, according to a new survey of over 4,000 businesses by the Connecticut Restaurant Association. The survey found 43% of Connecticut's restaurant owners stating their business conditions are worse now than versus 3 months earlier. Complicating matters is an environment where everything is more expensive today. 84% of respondents stated they are dealing with higher food and beverage costs, 86% are struggling with higher utility bills, and 62% have higher occupancy costs. Complicating matters is a labor shortage, with 59% of restaurants complaining that they lack necessary staffing and 80% carrying difficult-to-fill job openings. To cope with these problems, 94% of restaurants have increased their menu prices, 59% have reduced their hours, and 47% have closed on days when they were previously open. Restaurant operators are masters at balancing adaptation and innovation to provide amazing service for their customers, said Scott Dolch, president of the Connecticut Restaurant Association, in a press statement. While operators are more pessimistic about the economy, they aren't letting that get in the way of serving great food, providing exceptional service, and creating a memorable experience. In business management news, SEMA 4 taps Kevin Feeley as CFO. Kevin Feeley has been named Chief Financial Officer at Stanford-headquartered SEMA 4. Feeley was Senior Vice President of Operations and Head of GeneDx at SEMA 4 since May and was GeneDx's CFO prior to SEMA 4's acquisition of the company in January. He was previously CFO of BioReference Laboratories. Feeley is the first new executive appointment for SEMA 4 since it's announced the departure of company founder and president Eric Schadt and the layoffs of 250 employees earlier this month following a dismal second quarter earnings report. CEO Catherine Stuland stated that Feeley was the right leader to drive us toward a future of profitable and meaningful growth balanced with increased efficiency, ultimately returning value to our shareholders. And finally, from our contributors, a new tax savings strategy. This one is a little technical. The Qualified Small Business Stock, QSBS, and Section 1202 capital gain exclusion has recently experienced a surge in its popularity as a tax savings strategy. Section 1202 has been around almost 30 years, as it was enacted in 1993. However, over the years, it has been modified to adjust how much of the total capital gains can be excluded. Stock acquired from August 11, 1993 through February 17, 2009 allows for a 50% exclusion. Stocks acquired from February 18, 2009 through September 27, 2010 allows for a 75% capital gain exclusion, and stock acquired from September 28, 2010 to present allows for 100% capital gain exclusion. There is also no longer any alternative minimum tax preference for qualified stock acquired from September 28, 2010. The gain exclusion is limited to the greater of $10 million or 10 times the aggregate adjusted basis of the QSBS investment. The gain exclusion limits apply on a shareholder-by-shareholder basis. This allows the potential for planning to maximize the benefit. Generally, the following criteria must be met in order to qualify for the exclusion. The stock must be directly acquired by original issuance from a domestic C corporation. The C corporation's aggregate gross assets did not exceed $50 million before and immediately after the stock issuance. At least 80% of the qualified small business assets are used in the active conduct of at least one qualified trade or business as defined, and the stock must have been held for more than 5 years. The stock acquired must be at original issuance and acquired in exchange for cash, services, or property other than stock. The stock must be issued directly by the company and not received from a third party, such as in a secondary offering. It must be emphasized that the corporation issuing the stock must be a C corporation. There are special and complicated rules regarding potential LLC and S corporation conversions to C corporate status. Your tax advisor must be contacted in such regard. Also, it must be noted that a sale of assets of the C corporation prior to the 5-year hold requirement could certainly prove to be tax costly. And again, everyone is reminded to consult a tax consultant on any matters of this nature. Moving on to Westchester County news, Dominican University debuts a certificate program for public health informatics. Dominican University is launching its fall semester with a new certificate program focusing on public health informatics, an emerging field where healthcare and technology overlap to provide data and knowledge for improving patient wellness while delivering complex services in a user-friendly environment. The new program begins on August 30th and is designed for both those already in the workforce with a bachelor's degree and current undergraduate students at the Orangeburg-based school. The latter group can earn a concentration or minor in this subject. Daytime classes will be held in person while evening classes will be virtual. Dominican is offering this program via a $1.9 million public health informatics and technology grant, workforce program grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology. The school is one of 10 higher education institutions nationwide to receive this funding. The government decided that after COVID, they needed to be part of developing a trained workforce to address perhaps another pandemic, but also develop the workforce that is able to take all of the burgeoning amounts of information that we're getting, data, healthcare, etc., and bring it into actionable intelligence for leaders, said Kerry Boricki, the university's PHIT program director, and we had a dearth of people that knew how to do that and had those skills. Boricki reported the university has 20 students signed up for the premier semester, and she expected more to come in upcoming semesters. We're actively marketing the certificate program, which is a professional development program, because we think that people can jump on that at the last minute if they decide that that's what they'd like to spend their time doing this fall, she explained. Learning more about this provides some key arrows in their quiver for today's marketplace. While insurance is not the central focus of the program, Boricki noted the subject is addressed because so much of the system is oriented toward what you need to be reimbursed, particularly on the CMS side and on the Medicare-Medicaid side. I've talked about whether the insurance tail wags the entire dog, and certainly insurance companies need employees with informatics skills and public health informatics skills. Salaries in public health informatics can range from about $69,000 to more than $132,000, and the school promotes the new program by highlighting how obtaining a degree or completing a certificate in this field can bring about more robust salaries and job security. Furthermore, the school is offering its PHIT students paid internships provided by a consortium of partners that are advising the program, including Bon Secours Charity Health System, Cor Evitas, Cornerstone Family Healthcare, Mount Sinai Health Systems, Empirex Health, and the New York State Department of Health. In other health news, poliovirus found in Sullivan County wastewater. Sullivan County has become the third Hudson Valley location to confirm the presence of the poliovirus in its wastewater. The New York State Department of Health found the poliovirus in four wastewater samples, two each in July and August. The virus was previously detected in Rockland and Orange County's wastewater. In July, the first U.S. case of polio in nearly a decade was recorded with an unvaccinated young adult. The virus was also detected in New York City's wastewater. State Health Commissioner Dr. Mary T. Bassett warned that one New Yorker paralyzed by polio is already too many and urged those without polio vaccinations to get inoculated as soon as possible. On a different note, Molinaro blames Pelosi's money bomb for his election loss. Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro is blaming Representative Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, for his narrow loss to Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan to fill the vacancy for the 19th Congressional District. "I'm sorry for the bad news, but we fell 2% short of winning that special election," Molinaro said in a fundraising letter. The reason is simple. Pelosi knew what her donors would think if Republicans won this special election, so she detonated a money bomb in this race to buy her way to victory. Molinaro has a second chance to the 19th district in November. He is the Republican nominee for that race, while congressional redistricting is putting Ryan in the 18th district. "This was always going to be an uphill battle, and this special election loss proves that Washington Democrats are willing to say and spend anything to score a victory," Molinaro added. "But we have to pick ourselves up and get back in the fight so we can prevent our country from falling deeper into the pockets of Hollywood and radical special interests." In housing and real estate, Dutchess County sets up $12.3 million housing fund. A $12.3 million Dutchess County Housing Trust Fund has been created to aid in bringing more affordable housing to the county. The fund was set up at the direction of Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro. The plan called for three new programs to be conducted under the fund: the Housing Creation and Preservation Program, the Infrastructure and Pre-Development Support Program, and a First-Time Home Ownership Program. As communities throughout the nation deal with housing challenges, Dutchess County is working on solutions, Molinaro said. "This sizable investment represents the importance Dutchess County places on helping those who seek a place to call home and find it, whether that means rehabilitating current housing or creating new units or offering financial assistance to those looking to buy their first home. HCP will concentrate on new affordable rental housing through new construction, rehabilitation of existing housing stock, and adaptive reuse of non-residential buildings. Money could be used for projects having all of their units in the affordable category or for projects offering housing to mixed incomes. Single-room occupancy rental housing also would be eligible for funding. The IPDS would help with the expansion or extension of water and sewer infrastructure for affordable and mixed-income housing developments. It also would help fund the development of generic environmental impact statements for new affordable or mixed-income housing projects. FTH will support programs that will help provide down payment and closing cost assistance for low and moderate income first-time home buyers who can afford a mortgage but lack savings to cover the down payment or closing costs. The program will also support construction or rehabilitation to create affordable home ownership opportunities for first-time home buyers undertaken by nonprofit entities. To initially support the Housing Trust Fund, Molinaro asked the Dutchess County Legislature to allocate $9.3 million in federal money the county was granted in the American Rescue Plan and an additional $3 million from the general fund balance. Announcement of the Housing Trust Fund came just a few days after the county's Department of Planning and Development released its 2021 rental housing survey and a second report looking at for-sale housing in the county. The rental survey found that the vacancy rate in market-rate apartment complexes hit a historic low of 0.6%, the lowest rate since the first version of the annual report was published in 1980. In contrast, the rate of apartment construction in Dutchess, at 417 new units, was the second highest in the past 15 years. Rents in Dutchess went up in 2021 by as much as 7.9%, according to the report. The county's for-sale housing report found that the number of sales in 2021 rose 15% from 2020. The cities of Beacon and Poughkeepsie had the most active markets in 2021, with approximately 6.5% of homes in Beacon and approximately 5.5% of the homes in Poughkeepsie changing hands. The report found that construction of new one-family homes remained low, with 327 new homes built in 2021, compared with more than 1,000 new homes built each year during the early 2000s. The report also found that the square footage of new homes and lot sizes fell in the last decade. In 2021, the median lot size for a single-family home was 1 acre, down from nearly 1.6 acres a decade ago, while the median square footage was 2,400, about 500 square feet less than in 2012. And to finish up this week, Second Yonkers Movie Campus moves ahead with school lease approval. The plan to create a second movie and television production studio campus in Yonkers has started to become reality with the signing of a lease for a significant element of what's intended to be included on the new campus. The production center would be built at the former Rising Ground property on Hawthorne Street. In addition to a dozen new Hollywood-style sound stages, Great Point Studios, owner and operator of the Lionsgate Studio in downtown Yonkers, agreed to include a new Yonkers Public School in the proposed facility. The school would teach film and TV production in addition to the regular public school curriculum. Students would be given opportunities to use professional equipment while learning from industry experts. Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano and the city's Board of Education have announced that the board approved signing a lease for the school with iPark Riverdale LLC. The lease is for the Frank T. Biondi and Ames School buildings on the former Rising Ground campus. Rising Ground previously had been known as Leek and Watts, which in 1890 moved to the approximately 32-acre campus at 463 Hawthorne Avenue. Rising Ground now operates from headquarters in Brooklyn. The new media and production school will be for 500 students in grades 6 through 12. The S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University will be involved in developing the curriculum. And that's all we have time for today. I'm Mike Eastland, and I've been reading from the Monday, August 29th editions of the Fairfield and Westchester County Business Journals.